Before long, we'll be where it would have taken mankind millions of years of learning to reach.
And what will Mitchell learn on getting there? Will he know what to do with his power?
That's the big agenda here, is undermining the whole idea of journalism, and that's the real thing to worry about.
The good old Ministry of Truth has another outlet.
Too often, broadcast radio insults your intelligence instead of respecting it, improving it, challenging it. But not here. Where knowledge is power, this is Powerful Radio. This is 30 minutes of information and inspiration. This is the Ministry of Truth. Hello and welcome to the Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stupinczyk. On today's show, we'll feature a report about a controversial free speech zone incident at the 2008 Chicago Air and Water Show and my commentary about the incident. But now, a selection of news about media and democracy from the show Media Minutes.
Welcome to Media Minutes, a weekly review of news related to media and democracy. I'm Stevie Converse.
And I'm Candace Clement. Millions of people listen to internet radio every day. One of the most successful webcasters, Pandora, has about a million listeners daily and is one of the 10 most popular applications for Apple's iPhone. Yet Pandora and many other webcasters are close to shutting down their operations because they can't keep up with the royalties they must pay to performers and record companies. Last year, the Copyright Royalty Board, a federal panel of three permanent judges, ordered that webcasters more than double their payments per song. For Pandora, a site that lets customers create their own stations and listen for free, royalty fees will amount to 70% of its projected revenue. Webcasters have strongly objected to the hike, saying the CRB unfairly singled out internet radio for the increase. Webcasters must pay two sets of copyright owners, the owners of the musical works, usually the songwriter or composer, and the owners of the sound recordings themselves, a record label or the recording artist. Traditional radio stations pay a flat per-song fee and are only responsible for royalties on the musical work. The Internet Radio Equality Act, proposed in Congress to nullify the hikes and modify the fees, gathered more than 100 co-sponsors, but has stagnated in committee. Since the CRB ruling, deals have been cut between Sound Exchange, the organization that represents artists and record companies, and satellite and cable radio. The negotiations have cut their royalty rates to less than half of what webcasters pay, but independent webcasters like Pandora haven't been let in on the deal. Last week, Representative Howard Berman from California entered the fray. He's trying to mediate a deal between the webcasters and Sound Exchange, but the two sides remain far apart. For more information, go to savenetradio.org.
This month, the courts have ruled on some important issues involving copyright. A New York court refused to stop the distribution of the film Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. EMI Records and Capitol Records had alleged that the filmmakers violated copyrights of John Lennon's Imagine when they used a 15-second clip of the song while showing images about religion and science. The court decision established for the first time that fair use applies to copyrights in sound recordings. Sherwin C., staff attorney for Public Knowledge, explains the term fair use.
There's certain uses that aren't infringement. If a use of a work meets certain criteria, it's not an infringement of copyright. You want to be able to quote things. You want to be able to critique things. You want to be able to use copyrighted materials in education or in news reporting. These things shouldn't be considered copyright infringements because they're important parts of public discourse. So these would be fair uses.
In another case, a federal appeals court ruled that Cablevision's remote DVRs, which work like off-site TiVos to record television programs, didn't infringe copyright. The court ruled that there was no significant legal difference between the remote DVR and a VCR or a TiVo.
Basically, it's functionally identical to a TiVo. Just the way in which it's built is different.
The Supreme Court has previously ruled on Betamax and VCR technology and affirmed that it's okay to have a device that records programs off the air.
The fact that any time the technology changes, you get more lawsuits, that's a problem. These lawsuits will keep new services from coming out, keep consumers from being able to use them.
It's much more important than simple convenience or having a new gizmo to play with, says C. Being able to use material allows us to participate in cultural and political conversations.
The ability to record things and to take in that media and to remix it, to play with it, to excerpt it. If I find somebody saying something that I think is horribly wrong or offensive or bizarre on TV, and I want to show how offensive or strange or wrong that is on my blog, I can record that, transfer it to my computer, I can post it on my blog, and then start talking about it. If I just want to critique something or comment on it, I can do that. Being able to do that and show literally what it is that I'm talking about is a powerful tool. It's a powerful tool politically. It's a powerful tool culturally. We shouldn't lock people out of being able to do that just because technology has evolved and just because it's changed.
For more information, go to publicknowledge.org. You've been listening to Media Minutes, a production of Free Press, a national nonpartisan organization working to reform the media. For more information, visit freepress.net.
On February 17, 2009, all high-power analog TV in America ends, to be replaced by digital television. You probably heard about that, but there's a lot about this conversion that you probably haven't heard. About 50 million people in America still use analog TV, most of whom are poor, elderly, or don't speak English. There's no plan, and little funding by government and industry for outreach and serving the public, and broadcasters are hoarding up free TV spectrum for themselves rather than for public use. Get the facts. Visit dtvredalert.org to learn more. You're listening to The Ministry of Truth. I'm Mitchell Stripancic. We now feature a report about a controversial free speech zone incident at the 2008 Chicago Air and Water Show and my commentary about the incident. I wrote the following article on the Chicago Independent Media Center posted August 18, 2008, headline, Peace Activists Literally Fenced In at 2008 Chicago Air and Water Show. Dateline Chicago. In a brazen move against freedom of speech and against the Chicago peace movement, Chicago police held peace activists at the 2008 Chicago Air and Water Show inside a fenced-off free speech zone, as one police officer termed it. The free speech zone, surrounded by a 3.5-foot-high impromptu metal barrier serving as a makeshift fence, sat just south of the eastern base of the North Avenue footbridge, near the intersection of North Avenue and Lakeshore Drive. Peace activists and anti-war critics against the Air and Water Show have been a regular presence at the show since 1993, who traditionally assemble near the North Avenue Bridge. Activists and critics routinely decry the event's rampant commercialism and critiquing the Air and Water Show as being a giant commercial for the military and as a bonanza for military recruitment. Until recently, activists who assembled at the Air and Water Show could assemble and interact with other attendees unimpeded. However, in the 2008 show, activists were ordered to remain within the confines of the free speech zone, roughly 8 feet away from the sidewalk and on a hard-to-walk-on sandy surface. Police said that individuals who left the free speech zone would be arrested. The presence of the free speech zone made it much harder for passersby to interact with activists, placing the burden of effort to interact wholly on the passerby. Peace activists nevertheless still spoke with passersby who approached the fence and handed out flyers and brochures insofar as possible, despite the fence and despite armed police officers standing guard at the fence and along the North Avenue footbridge. Officially stated reasons for placing the fencing for this protest are mixed and have roused suspicion. Quote, officials say that corporate counsel determined that we represent an impediment to traffic, unquote, said Jane Becker, an activist with the Chicago chapter of the activist group World Can't Wait. Becker continues, quote, that would be about 12 of us, in a group officially estimated at, I don't know, 500,000 people? The 12 of us are an impediment to public safety and traffic? I don't think so, unquote. When I asked one police officer as to why the fencing was put in place for the activists, the police officer responded that the activists did not have a permit, even though past peace protests at the Air and Water Show were not fenced off despite not having a permit. The whole situation is fraught with further double standards. Throughout the Air and Water Show, displays for a host of commercial and military entities and services were openly available and openly distributing flyers. Yet police questioned activists for merely handing out flyers as protesting the Air and Water Show. Activists strongly believed that the fence and affiliated crackdown is connected with stifling organized opposition to the ongoing U.S. war in Iraq, whose costs in lives and dollars have escalated, and to the military, whose recruitment efforts have seen a downturn. Jane Becker also said, quote, I think they want to suppress voices in opposition to the Air and Water Show, voices in opposition to the war. Legal avenues to challenge the constitutionality of the fence and the free speech zone are not hopeful. Ron Kundi of Chicago Media Action said, quote, the ACLU has informed us that they have never won a free speech zone case. Thus, if we are arrested, we are on our own. It would help if we had some legal representation. We really feel abandoned, unquote. A disclosure, I am an active member of Chicago Media Action. That was a journalistic account of what happened at the Chicago Air and Water Show outside the Free Speech Zone on the weekend of August 15th, 16th, and 17th. For two of those days where protesters had assembled, they were fenced in, literally, and were basically shown off as though they were caged animals in a zoo, almost. While the use of the Free Speech Zone with regards to the Chicago Air and Water Show and the political activism and anti-war outreach have is a relatively new phenomenon. Unfortunately, there's nothing new about the use of a free speech zone as basically a way of curtailing dissident political statements, broadly defined. In fact, it won't even necessarily just be restricted to left-wing political opinion. For example, there is one example of a free speech zone is that outside of McCormick Place. When you actually go to McCormick Place, you'll actually see that there is a plaza to the west of McCormick Place. That plaza is basically what the McCormick Place security and authorities refer to as the McCormick Place free speech zone, or sometimes euphemistically referred to as the First Amendment zone. Again, I should also mention that rather euphemistic to refer to these rather small, isolated, caged areas as free speech zones or First Amendment zones. I like to think that the entire expanse of the United States is a free speech zone and a First Amendment zone. But nonetheless, these free speech zones, as they're defined, there's one in particular outside of McCormick Place on Chicago's lakefront, a major venue for conventioneers. And in fact, there was one convention which saw the debut in 2003 of RFIDs, radio frequency identifier tags. These are the infamous tags, very microscopically sized almost, or at least extraordinarily small tags that are used to help to emit and keep track of radio signals so that whatever happens to be tagged to them can be kept track of. Their formal introduction in McCormick Place at a convention there in September 2003 drew a protest. About 30 people or so, mostly from the political right wing, I might add, or had joined in a protest outside of McCormick Place. And they were held, for the most part, inside a free speech zone in McCormick Place. I actually also had a first-hand experience about this that same year in 2003, back in June 2003. On a rainy Tuesday afternoon, there were about maybe seven of us who were involved with the group Chicago Media Action, who were taking part in a similar protest outside of McCormick Place, likewise in the free speech zone, when the National Cable Telecommunications Association, the main trade lobby of cable television, or commercial cable television at least, had their annual convention at McCormick Place. And there was a protest there, and especially since then FCC Chair Michael Powell, who was got a pretty fierce beating as far as public opinion was concerned with regards to his recent controversial passage of a series of really odious, controversial media ownership rules that he had just passed a week before this protest. And there were a number of us protesting outside of this, and where the protest was basically held outside on a Tuesday morning in the pouring rain and inside a free speech zone, as it was termed. And there's nothing, and that, those are just another examples. Those are just some examples. Other ones include a protest outside of the Taste of Chicago, both in 2006 and I believe also in 2008, where you'll find folks who will criticize the open involvement of military recruitment, particularly at publicly sponsored events like the Air and Water Show, like the Taste of Chicago, like other events. But in particular, the Taste of Chicago in 2006 basically saw protesters, a fair number of whom were basically corralled into a free speech zone, seven of whom wound up being arrested. The charges wound up being dropped perhaps a year or so after their filing on basically no grounds. And similarly, in 2008, in the Chicago Air and Water Show, we're seeing the same thing. Basically, anything resembling dissident political opinion is basically forced into this isolated cage, more or less away from where most people could have a reasonable chance of seeing them, and basically threatened with arrest if they dare to try to leave, or at least try to leave the confines and actually interact with people at the Air and Water Show. The similar phenomenon you're actually finding in the recent political conventions that have been taking place with regards to the Republican and Democratic National Conventions that have been taking place in the summer of 2008. In Denver, right at the Democratic National Convention, you had a fair number of protesters, perhaps hundreds, perhaps thousands, the number at least to me seems to be unclear, but nonetheless a fair number of whom were basically riled up and ordered, at least a number of them were ordered into what were termed freedom cages, which has got to be probably the most Orwellian phrase I've ever heard, where basically amounts to a cage where people who have dissident opinion can say that, can basically go in there and have their peace and not, and basically away from the larger viewing public, broadly defined. That it basically amounts to crass intimidation and the repression of freedom of speech. Going back to the Air and Water Show in 2008, it seems to be unclear, as I had actually mentioned in the report, exactly why the Chicago Police Department and no doubt almost certainly the mayor's office had ordered to have these free speech zones implemented at the Air and Water Show, when for probably 14 years of protests, you didn't have this, and it didn't seem to be an issue. I mean, even right after September 11th, you nonetheless did not have this repression of freedom of speech, where they basically had to be caged in inside of these right behind these impromptu fences. Why do it now? It's unclear. Formal explanations seem to be shot full of holes. One reason, at least, that I think may have to do with a possible reason, and the nearest thing I can think of, at least for the moment, may have to do actually with the Chicago bid for the 2016 Summer Olympic Games, especially where Chicago is having an increasing amount of scrutiny on this count. And something like the Air and Water Show was being seen as something where, yes, Chicago staff, officials, police, security would be have to handle massive audiences, and especially of the kind of massive audiences that Chicago is hoping to would probably generate should it win the bid for the 2016 Summer Olympics. They would probably want to be able to show off, hey, look, we can handle crowds of upwards of 500,000 people and nothing seems to go wrong and everything is just fine. But nevertheless, it turns out that things are not fine, and we have actually seen in this case the repression of political speech. There is a rich history of the use of the Olympic Games as a gigantic corporate feeding frenzy and a bonanza for corporate and profit-making entities and institutions. And despite the stated claim and the reason the Olympics were founded back in 1896 as something to try to help to unify the world, that in some ways the Olympics winds up being just another tool that's being used to repress and divide people. You'll find, in fact, there have actually been instances of this going back at least the last 40 years, going back to the 1968 Mexico City Olympics, where you would have found that dissident political opinion protesting the Olympics was basically just openly mowed down by the Mexican government. When I say mowed down, I'm talking about hundreds of people who were killed outright in order to suppress any kind of political dissidents in the run-up to the 1968 Mexico City Olympic Games. Similar things have been pointed to with regards to Beijing, particularly where the Chinese government has been involved with displacing probably upwards of 2 million Chinese residents in order to basically establish the grounds that wound up being the home for a lot of the facilities that were used for the Olympic Games. Even though the Olympics advocate harmony and brotherhood and international spirit of friendly cooperation and competition. The fact of the matter is that the Olympics, within recent years and recent decades, have not been held to that high standard. And my fear is that with Chicago, I mean, even if it wins the bid for the 2016 Olympics, it may get actually far worse with regards to Chicago and with repression of political opinion. This is unfortunately not much of a surprise, and we're just seeing it now crystallize with the possibility of Chicago as a potential nominee. And that might be perhaps the leading reason with regards to the Chicago Air and Water Show, at least in my mind. We'll have to see. Maybe the evidence about this may come out someday. We are seeing also this intimidation factor where, and this has been certainly the case with regards to the protests outside of the Democratic National Convention in Denver, and actually also in the run-up to the Republican National Convention in the Twin Cities in 2008, where on the weekend preceding the scheduled Republican National Convention, you saw police, Homeland Security, the FBI, and probably a bunch of other federal and local law enforcement officials basically just raid convergence spaces that have been taking place. Convergence spaces of political organizers who have been gathering to protest against the RNC and have basically seen this massive crackdown, which basically amounts to intimidation tactics, especially since no charges have been filed. Any people who are arrested are basically released somewhat shortly thereafter. And the raids just keep on continuing, or have continued, in the days leading up to the convention. The intimidation tactics are also kind of par for the course with regards to another incident that took place in Chicago, that of the Lakeshore Drive protests. On March 20th, 2003, the day after the formal escalation of the war in Iraq, you saw upwards of 17,000 people protest against the war in Iraq in Chicago, basically taking over the six-lane highway of Lakeshore Drive adjacent to downtown Chicago. And police basically responded with massive intimidation, massive number of arrests on basically no charges, which are basically intimidation tactics. None of the charges have held up. All of the attempts to try to force arrests or force charges have been dropped. Lawsuits against the police have actually been the police and the city against the repression of freedom of speech rights have been proceeding at a snail's pace, but nonetheless have been proceeding. And in fact, a class action lawsuit won class action status and has been proceeding. The city and the mayor's office have basically responded with regards to a countersuit against protesters, and which now we have learned the legal costs and the various fees that have been affiliated with this have now run up in the millions of dollars. One estimate actually placed the amount of costs thus far on taxpayers against against trying to prosecute protesters, none of which have actually worked, at about $3.5 million. And the intimidation tactics continue in this regard. Why the intimidation factor? Part of me wonders, again out loud here, if the G8 in this instance may have had it. It's just because, as we spoke about how Daley has been trying to, Mayor Richard M. Daley, the mayor of Chicago for the last 19 years, we need term limits badly. Nonetheless, you're actually seeing a similar instance just 4 years ago when Chicago was considered the leading contender to host the G8 gathering of the heads of state of the eight major industrial and economic powers in the world. In 2004, the United States had its turn to host the G8, and Chicago was strongly suggested to be the host. In fact, actually, if it had been hosted in Chicago, it probably would have been in McCormick Place, which is where the free speech zone had been mentioned that I spoke about earlier. And that didn't happen. It actually wound up, instead of coming to Chicago, going to a remote island off the Georgia coast called Sea Island. It's not even on the U.S. mainland. It's actually about 5 miles off the coast and super hard to get to unless you're part of a helicopter or you have a helicopter in your garage or something. But nonetheless, and people actually did show up to try to protest, and was under super heavy police supervision in this regard. But what you're seeing here is basically this intimidation that part of me wonders if that because the G8 didn't come to Chicago, that maybe, just maybe, the city and the mayor are prosecuting these protesters for the protest in March 2003, where thousands, tens of thousands of people marched in the streets, got on CNN and got on the big corporate media, and the G8 got scared that they didn't want to see all these protesters. And so now you don't really see a whole lot of coverage about this, but nonetheless, you're seeing this intimidation, this crass bullying against all of these people who are just exercising their constitutionally mandated right for freedom of speech, free assembly, and freedom of expression. That's what really got to me with regards to the Air and Water Show in 2008 here in Chicago, particularly since, as things go, this is actually pretty small. You had maybe 12 people, as the report had mentioned that I read earlier, and maybe two of whom were probably under 40 years of age, 40 years of age, 40. That includes me, by the way. And I was just seeing this, and like the fact that they had to be caged up because they were afraid of what, basically? I mean, what's the real fear here that I was afraid of? I mean, they're not going to beat up on anyone, clearly. I mean, most of the people who are actually there are far more physically intimidating than any of the protesters are. But I suppose they're afraid that they didn't want people to actually raise a stink about the matter with regards to the failure about the war and the failure regarding the military and their recruitment efforts. How to be able to fight back? There are basically two avenues, one of which, it's sad to say, is basically, unfortunately, perhaps for the time being, perhaps for forever, closed. That of various legal issues. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, has refused to take the case of this, and refused to take any cases regarding the free speech zone ordinance, because they never win in court. The law is written in such a shady way that the city can basically get away with matters like this. National Lawyers Guild, the institution of progressive attorneys that have taken cases not dissimilar to this, although I don't know exactly what their track record or willingness to take on matters pertaining to the free speech zone ordinance is concerned. But nonetheless, there were no National Lawyers Guild attorneys at the Air and Water Show, regrettably. So the legal avenue is unfortunately out. The second avenue, which is there and which is hopefully more fruitful and maybe not only our best but perhaps our only option, is basically what I'm doing right now, using the media in whatever way possible. In fact, I was actually using the Chicago Independent Media Center as a platform for helping to get the word out about what's been going on regarding the Air and Water Show, writing up a report, posting it, getting and posting photos on the internet about this, also on Chicago Indie Media, text of a report about this, additional radio reports, some of which are hopefully continuing, including with this one, and a video that I've made that has documented a short film of about 4 minutes in length that I'll be posting on the internet and be making available on local television, as well as on national television and some number of outlets. And hopefully that will only be the beginning. I'm hoping to also assemble other ways to help to spread the word about this and to help to raise a hue and cry about this in various other creative ways. You'll forgive me if I actually keep my cards close to my chest at this, as far as this goes. I don't want to reveal my whole strategy just yet, but rest assured, I'm not letting this go. This got to me, and I'm not going to let this go in any respect. I'm going to keep, and hopefully others will as well, keep making this an issue and bringing it to the fore to a lot of attention, including with this very radio broadcast that I hope people have found informative and useful. Listen to all past episodes of the Ministry of Truth online at www.szcz.org. That concludes this episode of the Ministry of Truth. Special thanks to Mario and the staff of WHPK Radio in Chicago. Thank you for listening.